Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Back Issue Spotlight. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host.
And I'm Bob Breitel. In this episode, we'll be discussing a wide variety of back issues that John and I have recently acquired or read, as well as a spotlight on a classic comic storyline.
Well, the comics we're going to be talking about this episode came out over the span of many, many decades, because this is, of course, the Back Issue Spotlight. And I don't know about you, Bob. Well, actually, I do know about you. You've bought a lot more back issues than I have recently, but I've placed a couple orders.
Yeah, I had a crazy period there of a few weeks of just running a rampage on mycomicshop.com. They had some tremendously good sales out there. It's been a long time since I had noticed their prices being very good. They kind of they're repricing back around Christmas time at mycomicshop.com, where they tried to bring most of their stuff closer in line to Overstreet Guide prices, which was good and bad, because previous to that, they would have some issues that were way under guide price, and they would have other issues that were way over guide price. So they went through, they did some repricing, and they normalized a lot of their, pretty much everything, to guide prices, which is good, because you're not going to get, you know, the mile high syndrome where you look there and they've got books selling for four or five times guide prices. And they do very accurate grading. So if it's a book I want, I don't mind paying, you know, guide price, although I usually buy when they're running their sale so you can get it for 5 or 10% off. But I wasn't buying that many books. Then I noticed in March that they had bought a bunch of collections or something, and they were overstocked on things. And I believe that their algorithm drops prices when they have multiples of a single issue in stock. And in fact, some of these old books I was looking at, they would have six or seven in stock of some book from the 60s or early 70s. And the prices on these things were in some cases as low as 25% of guide. There were a lot, like 30% a guide, 50% a guide, but, you know, between 25 and 50% a guide, there were a tremendous, tremendous number of books that I needed, and I just couldn't pass up the savings, so I just went nuts on buying all kinds of books. We'll see.
Yeah.
As we get into it. So, well, I broke mine into four categories. Runs that I've completed. Runs where I'm getting close, general silver and bronze age stuff, and newer books. So maybe we can kind of run down and we can both do it in each of those categories.
Oh, like I'm anywhere near that organized.
Let's see if anything occurs to you. I'll talk about the runs I completed. I completed three runs.
Okay.
So I got Adam, number 5, mm-hmm. and that completed my Silver Age Adam run. I got Captain Marvel, number 27. Marvel book, first series from the 70s. That completed my run on Captain Marvel. And then I got Poison Elves, number 63, which is a newer book, but that completed my serious run of Poison Elves. And Poison Elves is actually something I got into after it had been coming out, so I got most of those issues on the back issue market.
Okay, and this will tell, you know, our listeners the huge difference in the type of back issue buying you do and the type of back issue buying I do. For completed runs, I completed the run of Next Wave Agents of Hate. I had stopped that at issue 8, so I needed to get 9, 10, 11, and 12, and I finally found a copy of 11. So I've completed that run. Ooh, yay. Yeah, right. I've been trying to get back into the Wildstorm reboot stuff, so I got Welcome to Tranquility number 9. So that completed that run. Again, I know, massively impressive compared to the runs you're completing, but, you know, hey. I also picked up, what else did I pick up? A couple issues of Mighty Morphing Power Rangers Ninja Rangers, which I think, but I'm not positive, completes that run. And I've picked up the first issue of The Misadventures of Jefferson and Clark from Ape. Got that through, I guess, Lone Star or My Comic Shop, whatever. I already had issue 2. That completes the run up to now. So, yeah, woefully unimpressive, I know. But, You were the one who picked these categories.
Well, actually, I can throw another one into that then, because I bought the entire series of Wolfskin from Avatar. And the entire series of Swamp Thing Volume 4, numbers 1 through 29. Those are kind of in – I just kind of went and bought the entire run all at one in one giant shot of these books.
Mm-hmm.
And then I bought all the William Gravel trade paperbacks. I've been reading the Gravel series from Avatar.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't realize until Damien from Cryptographic told me that the William Gravel character had appeared in these graphic novels, Strange Kiss, Stranger Kisses, Strange Killings. Then there's Strange Killings, The Body Orchard, Strong Medicine, and Necromancer. So there are these six graphic novels, kind of direct-to-trade stories that Ellis did with the William Gravel character. And I did not have any of those. And I really like the Gravel character. So ended up buying all of those through mycomicshop.com. And that completed those three runs for me too. But I was kind of like, that wasn't something that I had been collecting particularly, where I was looking for that last issue to fill in. I just kind of like went to mycomicshop.com and that Swamp Thing Volume 4, which I hadn't picked up because I wasn't that impressed with Volume 3 mm-hmm. of Swamp Thing. They were talking to me about it, and you know, so Andy Diggle did some writing on it, and you know, some other people that I really liked. It had Constantine in it, and I'm like, oh, that sounds really good. And I went on mycomicshop.com. Most of the issues were like maybe about $1.49 a piece or something. So I got the entire 29 issue run for about $40.
Cool.
You know, it's just like boom, done.
Well, I picked up the entire run of the Dragon miniseries from Comics Interview that ties into Southern Nights. The four-issue run – well, that was a four-issue run too. But the four-issue run of Dragon Lines from Marvel Epic, because that was like 99 cents a piece over at Torpedo Comics. So it's like, yeah, sure, it looks good. I also, I think, completed the run of Battle Girls from Antarctic Press. I was only missing issue 2. And then I finally completed the run of Futurians from Lodestone. That was Dave Cockrum series
yep.
that I needed issue 2 of. And that's one that I'd gotten the other ones, I think, off the rack originally.
Yeah, I got all those off the rack when they originally came out.
So
I'm getting close on a few more series.
Cool.
So I'm going to use series a little lightly in this first one. In Adventure Comics, I'm certainly not getting close on the entirety of Adventure Comics, but Supergirl was in Adventure Comics for several years. Mm-hmm. And I got number 385, and that puts me only one issue away from getting a complete run of the Supergirl issues from Adventure Comics. Avengers, I picked up numbers 7, 11, and 87. So now I have only four issues to go to complete my Avengers run. I need issues 2, 3, 4, and 71. On Daredevil, I picked up 3, 4, 5, 6, 9, 16, 52, and 81. I just need issues 1 and 2 to complete that series. And Ghost Rider, I got issues 2, 3, 6, and 11. Mm-hmm. I only need number 1 to complete that. And then in Ghost Rider appearances in Marvel Spotlight, I picked up Marvel Spotlight number 7. So I just need his very first appearance from issue number 5 of that series. So basically I have two Ghost Riders to have a complete run of Ghost Rider.
Cool.
And then Iron Man, I got 25, 38, and 46. I need three more issues to complete that run. And my most impressive in my mind is my Amazing Spider-Man, which I have picked up numbers 3, 4, 7, 11, 12, 14, and 16, which puts me five issues away from a complete run of Amazing Spider-Man.
That's impressive. Let's see. What runs did I get? I got a pretty good run of Green Lantern, and this is the Hal Jordan Silver Age stuff. I'm kind of working my way back on that. My collection picked up around 145. I've pushed that all the way back to, let's see, at least to 128, and then I got a couple of scattered issues before that. So almost to 122, skipping 127, and then 111 and 112, because those were at good prices over at my comic shop. And I also got some more Warlords, because as we talked about last time, I was pushing that back, because I only had some of the really later stuff, like post-100. And I've pushed that all the way back, I think, to issue 16 at this point. And then, because that's when they start to get a little bit more expensive. They're not that expensive, like $5, $10 or whatever. But, you know, when you've got about a dozen or so of them to, you know, a little over a dozen to get, you know, 15, it starts to add up.
Tell me about it.
Yeah. Well, most of my orders when I'm placing at my comic shop are right around that $50 point. Sometimes I'll go a little above that, but I usually don't do, you know, let me take a look. I've done... out of my history with them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them have been over $100. One was like $326, but almost all the rest are right around that $50. To the highest one was like $70 or something. Because, you know, I'm just trying to get that free shipping and then, you know, round out the order sort of thing.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, and most of my back issues that I'm talking about, I got off of my comic shop, although... all the key issues that I got them off of eBay. So, like, all my Spider-Mans and the first, you know, like, Daredevil 3, 4, 5, and 6, and Avengers number 7 and 11, you know, these books. These are all things that I got off of eBay. It's a little more difficult to get those. I mean, I can usually get key books on eBay for about 50% of guide price. Mm-hmm. And those key books at mycomicshop.com are typically right around guide price. They don't have like huge depth of, you know, Spider-Man number 4 that's going to make it really cheap at mycomicshop.com. So, I mean, it makes a big difference. I mean, it, you know, if it's a, you know, Spider-Man number 4, you know, guides at $416 and very good, you know, well, if I bought that at my comic shop, I'd pay about $416, whereas I got it for $200 off of eBay. You know, that's a big difference. So that more expensive key books I do troll around on eBay looking for.
That makes sense. So what was your next category?
Silver Bronze Age stuff that I just filled in a bunch of stuff on. I got a huge chunk. I got 54 issues of Action Comics between number 300 and 400. Mm-hmm. I got 24 issues of Adventure featuring the Legion of Superheroes. I got Aquaman number 10, Batlash 4 and 7. I got 19 issues of Batman between 160 and 200. I got 10 issues of Brave and Bold between 60 and 90. 43 issues of Detective between 310 and 390. I got 9 of the 80-page Giants. That was a 15-issue series. Now, I have Chris Johnson over at the Amazing Spider-Cast to thank for this one because he had been collecting those. And I really had not been aware. I knew that there were 80-page Giants at DC. And, you know, after the 15-issue 80-page Giant series, and it was called 80-page Giant, they just merged them into the run. So you'll see an issue, you know, now of you know, Batman, and it'll have like that number, you know, like C-55 or something on it. Mm-hmm. And they just, or G-55 or something, but they just merged the 80-page Giants in as 80-page issues of Batman, Superman, Detective, Flash, whatever. But the first 15 issues, it was a separate series called 80-page Giant. I had never collected a single one of those. So I got 9 of the 15 issues of that series. Then I got FF number 28. That's an X-Men crossover. I got 33 issues of Flash between 130 and 200. I got the Western Ghost Rider number 5. Puts me about 3 issues away on that one. But I'm not like really seriously looking on that. Just the, you know, one kind of jumps out at me, I'll pick it up. Green Lantern, I got 34 issues between 15 and 70. I got 6 issues of the Hulk, 5 Jonah Hex, 4 Metal Men, 10 issues of the first Silver Surfer series. Mm-hmm. Back from the, I guess, 60s, the Stan Lee and John Buscema one.
Right.
And then 9 issues of Strange Tales between 115 and 135. I'm working my way back to completing all the Doctor Strange, because I've got all of Doctor Strange except for all his appearances in Strange Tales. And I'm maybe about 10 or 12 issues away on that. I got 20 issues of Superboy between 125 and 160, 48 issues of Superman between 160 and 240, 11 issues of Tales of Suspense between 50 and 75, 15 issues of Tales to Astonish between 50 and 75. I got 17 issues of Thor / Journey into Mystery between 100 and 150. 3 Tomb of Dracula, 20 Weird Western Tales, and 4 issues of X-Men below issue 50. Basically between 36, 37, 38, and 48. They were all really cheap. They were like $5 or $6 a piece. Hmm. In fact, the original, these were all issues that were reprinted. I don't know, everyone knows, but at a certain point, X-Men became a reprint series, and it reprinted previous issues of X-Men
right.
from the run. MyComicShop.com had the original issues, these original issues, cheaper than the reprints of them from up in the 80s. So I bought these. But that was about it.
Let's see. And
that's all.
Yeah.
2 long boxes of comics.
Yeah. Now, of course, you know, I bought, you know, way, way more than that in the Silver Age category. Of course not. I got, I think, 3 comics that would fall into this category. It was, all of them were issues of World's Finest. Let's see, there was issue 154 and 157, which were non-canonical kind of Super Sons series, because these were the Super Sons when they were more, you know, elementary school age or whatever. And then I also got, since I was looking around in that area, issue 156, and that was the first appearance of the Bizarro Batman, and it had the Bizarro Superman and Batman essentially teaming up with the Joker. And it's like, okay, that just looks like a fun storyline. So I picked that up.
Those are cool. I don't think I have any of those. In fact, World's Finest is one series that I haven't really got researched out and on my active back issue list of, you know, ones that I'm looking for. It'll give me something to do once I get all my books in the comic base and can go through this stuff.
Cool.
So that was it for me.
So is that all your stuff? I thought you had one more category.
Oh, well, I moved them back. I had the newer stuff, but that was the Gravel, Swamp Thing, and Wolfskin. I moved them back into the completed runs.
All right, let's see what else did I get. I picked up issues 1 and 2 of the Dominion series from Boom. I picked up issues 1 and 2 of the Dragon Lion's Way of the Warrior series from Epic over at Torpedo. Again, 99 cents. How can you go wrong? Some sporadic issues of the second volume of Elementals from Kimiko. An issue from the first series of Evangeline from Kimiko, and a few from the second volume from First of Evangeline. Issue of Maze Agency. I think the issue of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers I got may have completed that run. I'm not sure. I got to check on that. A couple issues of Shenryaku, or something like that, or Senryaku. I can't pronounce these. She, Way of the Warrior, a couple issues there. 2 issues of Showcase, issues 95 and 96 with the new Doom Patrol. Both issues of Star Gods, so I guess technically that completes that run too. An issue of Zetraman from Antarctic Press. I don't think that completes that run for me, and that's pretty much all I got.
Yeah, I got some of that kind of stuff too. I didn't really count it. I mean, like, I picked up just fill in issues of stuff that's come out in the last year. I, you know, had to pick up an issue of Foundation that I missed, an issue of Northwind that I missed. Picked up cheap. I had stopped getting American Virgin around issue 12, and I picked up most of the issues between 12 and where it got canceled in dollar bins and such, but I wasn't really tracking those.
Yeah, anything I get locally like at Austin Books when I decided to go pick up some back issues. Because, again, I got some Foundation, some stuff like that. I don't include on this. I'm only including stuff I'm ordering kind of online that are, you know, back issues, I guess.
Yeah.
But for me, for all of these, this fell into kind of five orders. Three from my comic shop, one from Mile High, one from Torpedo. And I shop totally differently between those three stores. For Torpedo, I'm just browsing through their monolith section, which is all 99-cent stuff, and kind of anything that looks interesting or hits my fancy, I'll toss in my cart. I think that's where I got a lot of the She, a lot of the Elementals, the Dragon Line stuff, Evangeline. It's like, you know, for 99 cents, if it looks interesting and it's something I'm kind of, you know, wanting anyways or whatever, I'll toss it in. At my comic shop, usually I go there with a specific, you know, thing I'm looking for, be it the Green Lantern, the Warlord, or, you know, like I had the Next Wave Agents of Hate issue 11 on my want list. That hit, I tossed it in my cart, tossed in enough to fill the $50 for the free shipping, placed an order. So a lot of that is, you know, that's kind of my default place for back issues. And then the Mile High stuff, I go there simply for stuff that I'm not finding elsewhere. And I believe that issue I placed at Mile High might have even been that, you know, end of year, get $10, 50% off kind of deal. And even right then, it was hard to find stuff I wanted.
Well, I remember that deal. Someone off the forum told us about that, and I had a hard time spending $23 at Mile High. That was the irony of that.
Well, the only stuff I got there were the couple issues of the Mighty Morphin Power Ranger Ninja Ranger series that I couldn't find at my comic shop. The Welcome to Tranquility I'd been looking for, Zetraman, and an issue of Green Lantern. And that was it. And that's out of, you know, 88 comics or whatever. 86, actually, that I got.
Yeah. I just made the thread on the online comic shopping experience for back issues. I just made that a sticky, so people can find it at the top of the forums.
Good idea.
And that one has got reviews, and we encourage anybody else to put their reviews on here also. But we've got reviews of Mile High, MyComicShop.com, Newcadia, Torpedo, Atomic Avenue, various other online things. So if you are curious about people's experiences with these different vendors, you can just pop onto the forums, which we now have consolidated all the forums into a single forum, so you don't have to be looking in a bunch of different places. What's the URL that people should go to, John?
For the forums, I believe it's forum.comicbookpage.com. We'll take them straight there. Let me test that real quick, make sure I got that right myself. And helps if I spell forum right. It's too early in the morning to be doing this. The other thing I've done is on the front page of the website, I have included a link to mycomicshop.com. So yeah, forum.comicbookpage.com takes you straight to the forum. And then the so at the bottom of the front page, link to DCBS for new comics. That's where Bob and I both get our stuff. And then I've got an affiliate link to mycomicshop.com for back issues. And if you are placing your first order there, I get a 15%, you know, credit or whatever to my account. So use it or not as you see fit. It doesn't cost you any extra to do that, and it just kind of helps support the podcast a little. So if you want to do that, that's appreciated. If not, that's, you know, that's fine too. So, but like I said, that's my comic shop. The reason I put the link there is that is, like I said, my default for getting back issues. I'm happy with the browsing experience, the prices, the shipping, and the selection.
Yeah, and John and I have bought so many books from mycomicshop.com. If you got any questions about it, we also have a thread on the forum that's kind of a Q&A about mycomicshop.com. We also have a Q&A thread about DCBS. So if you got any questions you want to ask, you can feel free to go out there, ask away on the forum, and we'll do our best to answer. I mean, like, literally, I've spent over the years thousands of dollars at both these places over numerous orders. So, you know, got a little bit of hands-on experience with using them.
Yeah. I haven't done anywhere near the business you have with mycomicshop.com, but I've spent probably around maybe $1,800 in the last year. I swear, I've done more back-issue buying since we've started doing the podcast on a regular basis and stuff, Bob, than I have in probably the last decade.
Yeah, it gets. I'm a bad influence on you. It's a
horrible.
It's an addictive thing, though, because the prices are good. The grading is tremendously accurate. I found the grading from mycomicshop.com to be far more accurate than any other online retailer I have ever used, and I've used a lot.
Yeah.
Over the years.
Well, and what I like is it's so easy to find things, and you know, it's like. When I was, when I was looking for something, it's like, you know, it sparked an idea, and then all you've got to do is go jump to that, or if you want to find it, I know this came out around the same time, they've got things linked by publisher, by month of publication, all that kind of stuff. It's too easy to find things. They've got a really good search engine, it's easy to spend money.
Their want list feature is really nice also, because... You know, if I'm looking for like that one or two issues left that I need to finish something off, I can put it on the want list and what grade that I want it to be in mm-hmm. or that I want to buy in. And when one comes in stock, I get an email.
Yeah. Well, and you can also what condition you want it in, which is cool.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You specify either a range of conditions or, you know, whatever, and it'll tell you.
Yeah.
So... Anyway, that was what we were going to talk about our ridiculous amount of comic shop buying. And for the actual book feature, we're going to go to something a little more recent that's out in trade paperback now, but that we recorded a little bit ago about a series from Wildstorm called Highwaymen number 1 through 6.
1 through 5.
So... Or 1 through 5, sorry.
It's okay.
Highwaymen 1 through 5.
So we'll play that now. Now, you also wanted to talk about the Highwaymen.
Correct.
I read issues 1 through 5.
What did you think?
Overall?
I liked the whole series. I think it became a 5-issue series due to... extremely low sales out there in Wildstorm. I thought it was a great series.
I thought it was a good series. There were a few things about it that I don't think they needed to do, I'm not going to say that they hurt sales, but setting this a few years after Tomorrow, it's like, why not just go contemporary? There were a few places where... I think they showed a level of graphic violence that didn't really add anything at all to the story and therefore didn't need to be there, particularly in the first issue where we see somebody getting her brains blown out. I liked the lead characters. I thought it was entertaining. I thought it was good. I thought it was very much over-the-top action film sort of thing in a good way, by and large. But it didn't feel... like something that you could just keep doing this month after month after month for the long haul. You know, it's the difference between Lethal Weapon being a good film or even series of films versus would you really want to see that as a weekly TV show? So I thought it was good. There were a couple of things here and there I thought were almost slightly cliche. You know, the old guys coming out of retirement, proving they can still do it. The execution I thought was good, and certainly I think this was deserving of probably more than 5 issues. I don't know that a ongoing was necessarily the right move, maybe a series of mini-series. And certainly I think it should have sold a bit better than it did. It was a fun storyline, certainly one I think worth picking up in trade. If you like good action-adventure movies, because like I said, this had that feel to it, but it's also certainly not something I would have expected just to go, you know, lighting up the sales charts as a smash hit. And part of that is the lack of strength of the Wildstorm brand at the moment. part of that is this is a new property coming out of nowhere with, I think, minimal promotion. And it's a tough market these days. So.
You say minimal promotion. I think they got zero promotion on this book.
I think they got a little bit more than zero, not much more than zero. And I think one of the tactical errors that was made was most of the discussion that I saw online about the series was, I think, after the decision had already been made to end it with issue 5, and I think it was by the writer basically bemoaning how come new properties can't succeed in comics. Now, never mind the fact that new properties can barely succeed on television these days. You know, when a series, a new series on TV gets an order for anything beyond the initial 6 or 7 episodes it was commissioned for, people are saying, oh, wow, that's great. And if something actually gets a full season order, that's a hit. You know, whereas it used to be everything would get the full season, and it's a question of does it continue after that. So it's more than just comics that are becoming a very kind of cutthroat and competitive place to get a new property into. But I don't know. I didn't see much in the way of interviews, not that I was really looking, or promotional art or you know, samplers and stuff for the series before it started. I remember seeing it in previews thinking it looks halfway interesting, but I didn't pick it up until you recommended it.
Well, this is the kind of book that I like, and it's also the kind of book that I like as an indie book. I think it probably sold a little better being from Wildstorm than if it had been a real indie.
Oh, I think it sold a lot.
It didn't sell that
better.
Great. It didn't sell that great, right? The problem with it is that it could have sold even fewer issues and still been getting published had it been an indie book.
No, I agree with that entirely, in so much as an indie publisher would have had lower needs for what it would have had to sell, and if it had sold as it did from Wildstorm for an indie, it would most certainly still be going. But I think if it had been from an indie publisher, it would have sold a quarter of what it did, if not a tenth of what it did. And that's simply a matter of either readers or retailers or some combination thereof simply are not giving a lot of indie titles much support. You know, when I see something like Potter's Field, which is by Mark Waid, coming in below, I think, 4,000, although I'd have to go check. This is Mark Waid. I mean, he wrote Kingdom Come. He was on The Flash forever. He's back there now. I mean, this is a guy with a really proven track record. And people are barely ordering it. So when this guy, who is the writer on this, Bernardin, I have no idea what this guy has done besides Highwaymen. He's got, as far as I'm concerned, no real noticeable track record. And certainly Wildstorm at least got it where a lot of retailers would see it, whereas they might not have had it been an indie comic. But with that kind of a lack of a track record, and you've got to put more of the material out there, a better description of the premise and the feel of it, to entice people to get it. So,
well, my zero promotion comment is based on the fact that when something gets canceled with issue 5, right, mm-hmm. it's pretty much getting canceled. The decision to cancel it has been made prior to the first 2 issues having any kind of a chance to gain a toehold in the market.
Oh, certainly, certainly.
Certainly before they are able to do the typical Wildstorm Vertigo thing, which is put out the first trade at a very compelling price point to drum up the readership who tends to read Wildstorm and Vertigo stuff, the non-superhero Wildstorm stuff like Ex Machina, in trade format. I mean, this was just not given that kind of a shot. Now, I suspect that they will do a trade on this at the, you know, $7.99 to $9.99 price point, and maybe it'll pick up some other people. But, you know, obviously they're not going to then be able to go into the ongoing series at this point.
Yeah, they've got nothing to lose by packaging as a trade. But when the first issue starts out with sales well below 10,000 units, you got to figure that Wildstorm has a certain level of overhead. I mean, just their rent in La Jolla in California has got to cost a couple of bucks. And if this isn't chipping in towards that, they gotta determine, should we be focusing on a different book? And I don't fault them for that, but, you know, it is unfortunate that it means that a title like this doesn't get the opportunity to build an audience. The question is, had it gotten that chance, would it have built an audience? And in this competitive market, I really don't know. Now, if they can take this to an indie publisher that only needs, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 to break even, and if they got 3 or 4, they'd be happy and raking in the bucks. Be nice to see that happen too. I don't see this transitioning to another publisher like The Boys did. Just while it's good,
the only reason The Boys did is because Ellis.
Oh yeah. Well, and also it was selling up in the 30,000 range.
You know? Right, but even so, I mean, it was canceled while it was really strong, but it had a name creator on it too.
Yes, yes. And a premise that I think hits a wider audience. I mean, this is a good summer blockbuster action adventure movie kind of premise, but nothing that I think makes it totally unique and gotta have. It's certainly worth reading, it's certainly good, but these days that apparently isn't enough. So definitely glad I read it. Certainly recommend it. People check it out in trade. Good fun story, good characters, good art. But certainly not something that the retailers and readers these days seem to embrace.
This is definitely going to be consigned to the 50-cent or dollar bins at some point. The trade, if it follows suit, you know, shouldn't be that expensive. You know, if you can get that at a half-off sale, it'll be a really good, solid story to read for not that much money. I think, essentially, what we're seeing here is a debate for another day, but, you know, we have comics that are not your standard superhero comics and not by big-name creators are not given a chance because they're not being ordered by retailers. Now, follow me for a second here. It's like I picked up the first issue of this off the rack at the local comic book store. I did not order it based on the strength of Wildstorm because, to me, Wildstorm is doing very weak lately,
right,
since the relaunch. I didn't order it based on the premise because it was not advertised in a way that gave me enough information to want to try out this book based on the advertising that was in previews. It's not like Northlanders from Brian Wood where they printed, you know, 5 or 6 pages of the story in previews. It wasn't supported to that level, right? But I have a really good local retailer that picks up, you know, and this is essentially an indie book, even though it's from Wildstorm. I mean, Wildstorm falls into the indie category because most comic shops that I go into do not carry a full selection of Wildstorm books. As a matter of fact, most comic book stores, and I go into a lot of different comic book stores as I travel around the Western U.S., Highwayman was not even on the rack, I would say, in at least 75-80% of those stores.
Oh, certainly, because if they carry Wildstorm, they're going to carry the mainstream stuff, the Wetworks, the Gen 13, the Authority, you know, those things. And this is kind of off-brand, if you will. So certainly, yeah, I wouldn't expect strong
support. So my basic point is that since I found this going to the local shop and picking it up off the rack and saying, let me give this a try, and it seemed good, and I then bought it, well, for all the people who are never going to see this even on a rack, they don't even know if they're going to like this or not. The decision has been made by the handful of retailers in this country. You know, and that, I think, is the same problem that most indie publishers have, is a retailer is not going to pick up all those things because they have a certain amount of capital to work with. They know what does sell. They don't know what might sell, and they don't want to buy on a non-returnable basis a lot of these things that may or may not sell.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. There's the whole gatekeeper issue there of, like I said, if you don't pre-order it and you never see it on the rack, you can't pick it up. It's that simple. And for some stuff, you're simply not going to reorder it because you don't have enough information. And if, as a reader, you don't have enough information, the retailers have that same lack of information, but to a degree also an additional lack of either awareness or focus on that particular issue, just simply because they've got to go through everything and figure out everything that needs to be for their store. Whereas any individual reader is only looking for stuff that interests them particularly. So it's I think, a bigger problem on the retailer side.
Right. And now, I'm kind of thinking, and this is just a pipe dream, really, but and Diamond's not going to do it. You know, given that Diamond has got a monopoly on comics distribution, this is just not going to happen. But it would be nice if a lot of these independent publishers were able to band together somehow and provide any retailer the ability to get 5 issues of a book on a returnable basis. You know, if a retailer was able to pick up 5 copies and be able to return them if they didn't sell after 2 months, you know, well, would some retailers with the low risk potential of that pick up some books to actually stick on the rack? And I can imagine that, you know, most of the copies of Highwaymen that sold were not going out onto the rack, but they were for, you know, hardcore readers who actually do pick up these things and pre-order them through previews. And then a small handful, maybe 1 in 10 comic shops or less, I guess, based on my assessment of ones that actually do carry a wide selection of more off-the-beaten-track type of comics on the rack, on speculation.
No, I certainly agree that most of the sales for Highwaymen were either pre-orders or essentially pre-orders for pull lists and stuff, and that very little was done on speculation that somebody will pick it up off the rack. Certainly, I think there was some copies on the rack, because clearly both of us were able to pick it up that way. But those are, I think, few and far between the types of stores that have that. As for doing some of this on a returnable basis, even to just a handful of copies per store, I mean, imagine if they did that for Highwaymen and a couple hundred stores picked up those 5 issues and returned any meaningful amount of them, then suddenly any profit they had from this, and with the numbers they were selling, I got a question if they had any profit from this, is suddenly completely blown out of the water by the returns. So while I think pushing some of that risk back on to the publishers just does seem fair in many respects, it could also be very detrimental, more so for the smaller publishers than for, say, Wildstorm, which is part of DC. But to me, the problem is a matter of information. The retailers and readers who are pre-ordering this needed to have more information about the contents of the comic to know if it was right for them or not. This is the kind of thing, if instead of being a 5-issue series had come out as a Hollywood, you know, movie for the summer, it would have done okay. Yeah, maybe not, you know, blown the doors off everything else for the summer, but it certainly would have done more than 10,000 people, you know. But that's just the part of that's just the difference in nature of even a movie that flops can do, you know, comparatively well to a comic that's a major success. So certainly, yeah, there's something wrong with the system as it has evolved that is resulting in new properties not getting any kind of a chance, like you said, to get a toehold in the market and to build an audience. And if they don't come out of the gate successful, they stop. And that, over the long term, is going to be a real problem for the industry. So,
yeah, and I knew right out from the gate that, you know, my theory there was completely unworkable in the hard realities of the business world. But basically what I'm saying is if you're, you know, if you're putting out something like this from Wildstorm, you're screwed. It's not going to sell.
Well, you know, I actually would disagree with that in so much as if this had come out from anyone other than, say, Wildstorm, because really I think even if it had been an Image or maybe a Dark Horse, it might have been okay. Anywhere else, this would not have seen anywhere close to these sales and would have been completely toast. I think it was the fact that it came through Wildstorm that it did this well.
Right, but I'm saying from the standpoint of actually becoming a successful series. I don't care that it sold 8,000 copies through Wildstorm and it would have sold 2,000 copies through anybody else, because, frankly, 8,000 copies is not going to cut it for Wildstorm, so it's doomed. So it doesn't matter that it sold 8,000 copies.
Agreed.
Of Wildstorm.
I just think if it had come out from a random indie publisher, we'd be talking not in terms of thousands, but in terms of hundreds.
I disagree with you there. I mean, how many copies did Black Diamond sell from AIT Planet Lar?
Off the top of my head, I am not sure.
It sold more than hundreds, is my point. And, you know, this is in a similar vein to that. Now, you don't read that book either because it's, you know, kind of off the, you know, kind of indie track that you tend to look at. But, I mean, it's selling probably at least a couple of thousand copies.
Yeah, but AIT Planet Lair also has an established track record, as does Larry Young and stuff. So that, I think, is a slightly different ballpark. I mean, this may have done a couple of thousand if it had been an indie thing. But if it did above 4,000, now granted, you're right. For an indie publisher, that would have been enough to keep it going.
And I'm not saying it would do 4,000. I'm saying that from an indie publisher, it could have, you know, if it would have come out from IDW, if it would have come out from Image, if it would have come out from Dark Horse to some extent, it would have done less, but that would have potentially been enough.
True.
To give it a chance.
That's fair.
To not be canceled at issue 5 before it even had a chance to have a trade and build any kind of momentum.
Well, and the other thing to factor in was, when was that announcement that it was going to end with issue 5 made, and how did that impact the sales of the issues that came out after that? Because once you've got a lame duck title, you know, sales are going to drop off, usually. So, cool.
I mean, and it could have been published as a 5-issue series. For instance, you look at like a lot of what Red 5 is doing, you know, like The Abyss, you know, that's a, you know, 1 of 4, right? So it's not even coming out as a ongoing series.
I had thought when I had seen the original solicitation for Highwaymen that it was a miniseries. Not that it necessarily said that, but my expectation was not to see, say, a 7th or 8th issue of this title. And I don't know if that's just me being cynical or that there was something about the way it was solicited that just gave that impression, while it certainly didn't flat out say that. So to find out it was canceled with the 5th issue was a surprise, in so much as there was presumably an expectation that it would go beyond that.
Well, there's never an of 5 on any issue, so.
Yeah. But in this day and age, they should have, I think, started out with a, particularly from Wildstorm or really anywhere else, go conservative, test the waters, do a miniseries, see how it goes. And above all, if it doesn't go beyond that, essentially whining about it on the internet, not necessarily a great move. I don't think that's going to get this writer any huge fans in the future based on that. Now, certainly based on this work, he's a good writer. So, interesting.
Well, I mean, my point is that he's doing fine work, and his whine is, to some extent, justified because he's right. In this market, you know, from this publisher, he's screwed. He's pre-screwed, in my opinion.
No, I agree with that.
Because retailers are not supporting, historically, in the last number of years, they are not supporting titles like this.
True.
At all.
The real irony is his complaints about the sales that he put on the internet probably hit more readers than the title did. And that in and of itself is a really sad commentary on the state of the comic book kind of direct market in many, you know, many ways. More people saw those complaints about how Highwaymen sold than saw Highwaymen on the shelf. And there's something just so fundamentally wrong about that that just boggles the mind. I mean, to me, this is all a problem of information flow. If better information about the title had come out at the right point and enticed people to pick up the series, both in terms of when it had to be pitched to the retailers and the readers who pre-ordered, and when it hit the shelves, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now, or at least not about this particular title.
Right.
But you're right.
But, you know, there needs to be a better push by the publishers to convince retailers to pick up a book. More so, I think, than, well, maybe not more so, but I mean, if the retailer does not stock a book, it's not going to get picked up by the end reader. I mean, that's a...
Oh, yeah, entirely.
You know, that's a true fact. I mean, if it's not on the rack in, you know,
any store that
8 out of 10 comic shops that I walk into, you know, that's not going to say a whole lot about the chance of it finding a readership.
Yeah, any store that it's not on the shelf at has completely obliterated any kind of impulse buy option for that title because it's simply just not there. Yeah, I agree with that entirely.
And like I said, I mean, there is like, and I live in Southern California, okay? There's like maybe two shops in a 30-mile radius of where I live that I know that I can go to find an indie book, like, you know, and I count this as an indie book, even though it's from Wildstorm.
Yeah.
There's maybe two, and I have to drive. They're not that close. You know, it's just most people who are going to a local shop, they're just not even going to see a book like this.
Well, and it goes back to, as a reader, if you want to support a book, what you need to do is go to your local shop and ask them to pre-order it. And, you know, that'll hopefully get them to be aware of the title, maybe even put a copy out on the rack.
Yeah. So. That gets us into the whole other debate where you got, you know, on the boards we've had this debate, not recently, but, you know, in the past, there's a whole crowd of people who are just violently hostile to the idea of previews. You know, I'm not going to pay for a big ad, and I don't care, and I'm going to send it. Well, you know what? If you're not looking at previews, you're not going to see a lot of really good stuff that's out there because your retailer is absolutely not going to be showing most of it to you. Now, Wildstorm, you will see. I mean, you can go on to Newsarama, and, you know, they have the DC and Marvel solicits. But certainly – and I look around for it, you know, there is a tremendous amount of indie stuff that you are never even going to see solicits for online. And if you're not picking up a previews, you don't even have the chance of seeing a lot of this stuff and to make a determination of it's something that you'd be interested in. But, you know, a lot of people are strictly main universe superhero people, too.
Yeah, but they're also missing the opportunity to see what some of their favorite creators are doing elsewhere. I mean, you've got
the Mark Waid example is a perfect one.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the fact that, you know, Mark Waid, and that was a really good book, that Potter's Field, you know, that people won't even get a chance to see Potter's Field because it's coming out from Boom Studios and a lot of comic shops don't order stuff from Boom Studios.
Yeah.
Which again, you know, the numbers that you're seeing are orders by shops, not sell through to end users. So, you know, the fact that, you know, Potter's Field sells about 4,000 copies means that, and you know, the shop that I go to, you know, that carries a lot of indie stuff, mm-hmm. I go in there and a book like Potter's Field, he's got about 20 copies of it in there. You know, he gets a stack of it.
Yeah.
He doesn't just order two. You know, so yeah, I got to figure that the shops that do support indie books are probably doing similar where they're ordering, you know, 10 to 20 copies, which means that if it's selling 4,000, you know, only a handful of all the total comic shops in the country are even giving it a chance.
Well, the number I've heard is there's about 200 or 300 stores that really support independent comics. And, I mean, that would account for the majority of the sales for something like
yep.
Potter's Field or some of these other titles.
Yep.
So if you really want to know what's available out there, you've got to pick up previews. You got to go look.
And to some extent, you know, it's wherever you live, you've got to know what that store is that supports independent comics. You probably have to have a car. And, you know, it's most all of the LCS dollars that I spend in a month, I spend at that shop that supports the independent comics.
The same way, you know, there's one shop locally that's very good about supporting indie comics, and that's where most of my impulse buys, that's where I spend all my money at local stores.
Yeah, Austin Books, right? You know,
yeah.
So it's like, you know, if you're going to go browse someplace, and I'm the same way, if I'm going to go browse, and I probably drop about $75 to $100 in comics, tunes, and toys each month, and it's just because I know that if I'm going to browse for something that I don't already have, it's the only store I can go to that I'm likely to see anything in that I don't already have. Because most of the stores that just carry the mainstream Marvel and DC stuff, I've got all that.
Yeah.
I don't need to see all that stuff arrayed out on the rack for me.
Yeah. No, I go to the one store just because it's a waste of time usually to go to the others. The likelihood of them having it is fairly low, so, which is unfortunate.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.